Well, good afternoon, Staten Island. This has been such a great time so far. I love the panel. I loved all the personalities and the realness and talking about these different topics. And Patty, thank you. That was very informative and convicting and challenging. And I think we'll all be thinking about water differently and maybe breathing, sitting down, taking that seat, and really breathing while we eat so that we're nourishing our bodies. I'm really excited to be here today with you guys and very honored to spend this time. Those of you that don't know, my husband and I lived out here for the first 3 years of our marriage. And we lived in Dungan Hills, and I loved it here. This is a very special place to me, and when I come back, you know, I think about the little things like Ralph's Ices, and, you know, I have my favorite Italian place that my parents still always want to come to when we visit, and it's Brioso in New Dorp. And I used to run here on the boardwalk, like in Midland Beach and that. But my favorite part is the people. I love the community here, and just coming back and seeing familiar faces and seeing people that I know, it's just something that I miss so much. And I feel like this group of people is where I really learned how to love and really learned about relationships. And there's always a piece of my heart here. And it feels like I'm just coming home, and it's very refreshing to my soul. And I hope that as I'm being refreshed today, that this can be a time of refreshing for all of you, to really refresh your body, your mind, and your soul so that you leave here feeling alive. And I know we spent most of this first part talking about our body, and this next part, we're going to be focusing on our mind and the soul. But if I'm going to be honest with you, it all kind of goes together. And I think we even saw that from what Patty was talking about, how where does the digestion start and the nourishing start in our mind? It's really interesting how all of these really fit together. They're so intertwined. And so as I speak, you're going to kind of see it all meshes together. And I think about, you know, the same way about thinking about what we put in our bodies to really nourish our body so that it sustains us. That it can either sustain us or it depletes us, right? And pollutes us. It's the same thing with our mind. The things that we put in our mind can either sustain our soul or it can deplete our soul and pollute our soul. And so that's some of what I want to kind of look at today. And we're going to look at a story of a woman where we can see this interconnection. We can kind of see that there's a lot going on in her body, mind, and soul, how she was depleted and polluted, and how she came to be alive and how she changed. So I know the scripture's on your pamphlet. You can look at it there. I have a slightly different version that I'm going to read from. Or if you have a Bible, you can open up to Mark 5. And we're going to read verse 24 through 34, and then we're going to kind of go back through it and break it down. But it says, a large crowd followed and pressed around him, speaking of Jesus, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately, her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you can ask, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be free from your suffering." So let's stop here and just consider this woman and consider what's going on for her. I mean, first we see there's some issues going on in her body, right? I mean, this woman has been subject to bleeding for 12 years. It was some form of uterine bleeding, We're not sure exactly what that means, but that she was bleeding for 12 years. I mean, think about that, a 12-year-long period. I know a lot, I don't know about you, but that once a week, once a month thing going on is enough. And oftentimes can be way too much. And it's one of those things that, you know, I don't know, maybe we'll have a little conversation with God in heaven, like, seriously, like there wasn't a different way, like what was that all about? And, you know, I think about, you know, this woman had some symptoms, right? And it looks like she even had it, right? She's here. And how that affected her body. And I think about it too, like it can be hard enough for me to deal with having a period once a month, and I have modern convenience of Tampax. We know all about hygiene, like all of the things that really can kind of help us get through. We have Midol. We have things like that. We have the support from one another. And, you know, I think about 12 years of bleeding, losing all that blood, and how that would affect her body. The fatigue that she would feel. Most likely, she probably was anemic. I can't imagine that she wouldn't be, losing that much iron in her blood. The discomfort, the inconvenience. You know, according to the law at this time, she was considered unclean. That when women menstruated during this time, they had to be separate from everybody else. So for 12 years, she was forced to live outside of her home, outside of her community. And I don't know about you, but I would have some feelings about that, you know? And I can't even like wrap my mind around that, that because there's something going on in my body, I can't be with my community, a time when you would need them the most. You know, according to law, she was not allowed to touch another person, and another person was not allowed to touch her. And think about that. You know, sometimes we can take touch for granted. You know, sometimes we can even have the luxury of being like, I'm not so into touch. But you can feel that way because there's people trying to touch you. Maybe they're trying to give you a hug. But it's like we can have that. You know, we can put our arm around or get the hug or squeeze of the hand, something to let you know that someone is there, that there's compassion, that there's connection. You know, think about that. No touch for 12 years. After 12 years, her friends or family are gone. They've moved on. And I think about her mind. How would that affect the way she thinks, what she thinks about? I'm sure it consumed her mind, that all she thought about was her illness and how it had affected her whole life, how it had ruined her whole life. Maybe it's the thoughts of how unfair this is and why me? And you kind of look at everybody else in the distance and how their life is perfect and yours isn't, and how that can feel. You know, we can tell by the scripture. She had been to many doctors. She's trying to find a cure. She's trying to find a remedy. The amount of thinking of trying to find the next doctor, get yourself there, pay for it, follow through with the cure. I mean, some of these remedies were ridiculous. Boil onions and drink the broth. Like, that's going to cure you. But I'm sure she tried it. And it's like, no matter what, she just kept suffering. She didn't get better, and she got worse. You know, and I think the thoughts of, like, if I could just fix this one thing, everything would be okay. It probably consumed her, her every waking moment. The worry, the concern, the hopelessness, the numbness. She spent everything she had, and it cost her everything. And I think about when our minds are in that place, what it does to our soul, to our very core. When we have that negativity, we have that thing looming over us, just a discouragement, the hopelessness, the shame, the frustration, the anger. how she might have felt like a prisoner in her own body, the isolation, the loneliness, the emptiness, like the living dead. You can see how it's all connected, right? How the body, the mind, the soul, it all connects together. And I want you just for a moment to just think about yourself. And think about, what is that for you? Where is that place where maybe you're bleeding? Maybe it's been a year, 12 years, maybe it's been longer. That place where you can feel your soul is sick, it's depleted. And sometimes it comes to mind right away. We know exactly what it is. And other times we've worked really hard at kind of pushing it away and ignoring it. So it can take some time to kind of surface. But I want you to give it some room to come out today. Those places that can really consume our thoughts and our energy. That can feel like that black hole that just sucks everything out of you. And, you know, for you, it may be like this woman. It could be an illness. It could be a chronic illness that you really struggle with, that really takes everything out of you. Sometimes it's things like finances, that we just feel like we're just hemorrhaging money all the time, the credit card debt. We're trying to work and work and pay the bills and get everything in line, and it just seems like nothing works. We can never get on top of it. And the worry and the concern. You know, sometimes it could be in our marriages. Sometimes it's the conflict, the disappointment, the hurt that you can't seem to get past. You know, maybe it's motherhood. It could be the lack of motherhood that really fills us. But sometimes becoming a mom isn't what we thought it would be. And that can be hard because no one talks about that. And sometimes there can be those feelings. Sometimes it can bring parts out in ourselves that we didn't know were there and are very painful to see and can bring a lot of shame. You know, sometimes it's reaching a certain age and not being married and feeling like, well, this wasn't my plan. And how did this happen? And well, what's wrong with me? And then why is she getting married? And what, that whole thing that can really affect us. Sometimes it's the way that we just feel about ourselves. You know, that negative voice that just can live back there, that's no matter what you do, it was never good enough. And somehow it's your fault, you know? And sometimes we can be the person that has everything, you know? You have it all together. You have your career or whatever it is that you wanted, but you still feel empty inside. There's still that place and it doesn't make any sense. And it's hard to talk about that because anyone would look at you like you're crazy. You have everything. How could you feel empty? How could you feel disappointed? And I think, you know, those places really leave us feeling isolated, lonely, empty, and filled with shame. And so for today, I know often we try to ignore those places. But just for today, I'm going to ask you to invite that in. And maybe you don't want it sitting next to you. That's fine. You can have that place just sit back in the back of the room. Maybe you want that place to sit right up here front so they can maybe hear something that they need to get. But just to invite it into the room, let it join us and just be a part of today. Because I think, you know, those places where we bleed, you know, like this woman, we can go to many doctors, right? Trying to get the cure and be better and get relief. And, you know, it could be the doctor of entertainment, right? We can go to that doctor, get lost in social media, we can binge watch Netflix, we can kind of get lost in these places to kind of take away the suffering. We can go to the doctor of success. If I just achieve this, or if I get this, or I get here in my career, or I get this degree, or whatever it is, I'll feel better. Sometimes it's the doctor of pleasure, right? Those extra glasses of wine at night to just take the edge off. But we need a little bit more to get that edge off. It can be this prescription medication, the pills to relax, the pills to calm down, the pills to go to sleep. It can be the doctor of relationship, right? Feeling like we need to find that right man. And we can find ourselves in the hands of all these doctors, and nothing works. We spend a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of effort, and find ourselves only getting worse. And so what do? We hide it, right? We kind of just put that away, and we hide it, and we shove it down, and we ignore it. And we'll talk more about that. But you know, those doctors don't work. Right? They don't. We keep trying to convince ourselves, but they don't. And, you know, that's why I love this passage, because it brings in Jesus. Because Jesus is the only doctor that really is going to heal us in our body, mind, and soul. That's the doctor. And so we're going to look at this woman's experience with Jesus and what happens. You know, it starts off kind of setting the scene here that Jesus has this large crowd following him, and it's so large that it's pressing up against him, right? I mean, it's just there's people. It's one of those when there's people all around you. And I think of, like, Times Square, which I hate Times Square. Like, I do not ever. It's the only thing that can make me, like, just go crazy. It's just Times Square. Maybe you love it and you love the lights and the excitement and all of that. My husband loves Times Square and he can go with the boys whenever he likes. But I avoid it because there's so many people and I feel that, like, it's pressed all around and I can't walk and I can't breathe. But I think about, like, this situation with a celebrity, right? Because when people heard that Jesus was around, this was like the man you wanted to see. So people, no matter what they were believing about him, wanted to see what he was all about, because that was the word on the town. And so, you know, I imagine this with everybody there. And this woman goes to that crowd. This woman who's been isolated, who's not allowed to be a part of the community, who's been shut out, shows up to, like, Times Square on, like, New Year's Eve or something, you know? And I imagine, you know, if you think about where Jesus would be, the crowd would be around him, and everybody's wanting to get to him. And what it took for her to just get herself to Jesus, not just see him, not go, okay, I think that might be him, the top of his head over there, but she really had to press through this crowd to even get herself to him. That would take a lot of determination. You know, I think about the risk that she took, because technically it was against the law for her to touch anyone in that crowd. And I can't imagine that she got to Jesus without touching a lot of people and a lot of risk. And I think, you know, she wasn't saying anything. She's kind of going unnoticed and probably hoping that no one would notice. And it probably was her last resort. She's tried everything else for 12 years and nothing's worked. And she hears about this Jesus and shows up. My last resort, my last chance. And musters up that last bit of strength, energy, determination, that smallest piece of hope. And she gets to him, and she reaches out, and she touches him. And what's amazing is that it's not like she, like, grabs Jesus by the arms so that his power can, like, she doesn't even touch, like, his actual physical body. She touches the tassel of his outer robe. That's what it talks about in the commentaries. So it's like he has his garments on, and then, like, a robe on top of his garments, and then there's tassels hanging off of that robe, and that's what she touches. That piece. And in one sense, it's like what she did was small. It was a very small touch, but she had to really push her way to get in there. But by pushing her way to get to him, there was such power. The power of that touch changed her life. The power of that touch healed her body immediately. She's instantly healed. Like, she can feel it in the moment. Like, she just, it's not like she touches him and then later on realizes, oh, I've stopped bleeding. It's so powerful that she touches Jesus and instantly knows in her body that the bleeding has stopped. I can't imagine what that realization would do for her mind. Knowing I'm healed right now. The power, the hope that comes back into her mind, the possibility that comes back into her mind, that she no longer has to be consumed with this ailment because she's now healed. You know, the power of touch can change our life, but it's the power of touching Jesus. And I notice here, you know, what's interesting to me in this crowd is that there were a lot of people around Jesus, right? There's a lot of people pressing up against him. A lot of people that day came in contact with Jesus, right? But nobody else was suddenly healed. No one else experienced the power of change. Because see, there's a difference between bumping into Jesus and reaching out to touch him. And I think a lot of times we can find ourselves bumping into Jesus. We can walk in the crowd with him and go, there he is. I know him. I've seen him before. I could tell you a few things. I could share his story. You know, sometimes we go to church. Maybe we pray. Maybe we try to be a good person. There are things that we can do in our life where we're kind of around him, but we're not experiencing the power of change, right? We're not experiencing that power of Jesus. And that can be really discouraging. I think there's nothing like being around Jesus and not having change. And I think, you know, for us, let's not let that be one of those times. To not let that be a time where we're just bumping into Jesus this afternoon, but what we can really reach out and touch him. And asking ourselves, well, what would be different if I actually reached out to touch Jesus? What would I do differently? What would it look like for me if I was doing that? Would my heart or my attitude be more open to Jesus? Would my heart or attitude be more open right now? Like, what would it be? And just kind of think about that for a moment. You know, with this woman, I see this deliberateness, you know, that she didn't just show up in the crowd. She didn't just walk around him, but she really pushed her way in. She was determined. Maybe even very forceful at times. Who knows if there was a little shoving going on. But she was going to get herself there. And I think that encourages me because I think here's a woman who's really suffered for a very long time. But somehow, when she saw Jesus in the distance, it gave her enough strength and determination and faith to push in. And I think we can remember that in ourselves. You just have to get that small glimpse of him. And it'll give you enough determination, energy, and faith to push further so that you can reach out. But to be honest, you know, it is scary. It's scary and terrifying and uncomfortable and vulnerable when we put ourselves out there, right? She could have pushed all the way in and nothing could have happened. That was her risk. Of being disappointed one more time. She may have thought, I can't handle that. You know, sometimes we can get to that spot where it's like, I can't handle another disappointment, so I'm just not going to try. I'm just going to hang back. You know, but she boldly pushes through the crowd to reach out and touch him, and we see that desperation and that determination. You know, on the one hand, she goes unnoticed in the crowd, kind of lost in the crowd. She didn't speak to him. She didn't beg him to heal her or plead her case before him. She didn't get his attention. But rather, she secretly touches him and then slips away in the crowd unnoticed. And maybe you can relate to this woman. You know, sometimes we can feel lost in the crowd. We can feel lost in the busyness of our life, right? It's why we can't be still and sit down because we have so much to do. We just get lost in that. Sometimes we don't want to bother anyone. I don't know if you've ever thought that. I don't really want to talk about what's going on. I don't really want to take that step because it'll bother somebody. People don't have time. You know, we can feel that unnoticed and hoping no one notices us. And it can make it really difficult to reach out. But, you know, when I look at Jesus here, we see that just by touching him, there was power, healing, and change. Just by touching him, her mind changed. Like when we reach out to touch Jesus, it can really change our mindset. You know, and it's like I think about the panel, taking captive those thoughts and making them obedient to Christ. We need Jesus in the picture to really change our mind so that our soul can be nourished. But even though with this woman, you know, we see that instantly she's healed, we still see secrecy and shame. Because it's interesting to me that she's healed instantaneously. And in my mind, I would think, why are you not screaming in the crowd that you have been healed? Because how amazing would that be? That you would want everybody to know, that you'd be like, oh my gosh, you have to know what happened. I mean, I would just think that it would just come out of you, that you would want every single person to know. You wouldn't care because this thing that has been just on your mind, that's been just killing your body, is gone. You're finally healed. But that's not what happens. You know, it's like even after she's healed, she remains quiet. And I love looking at Jesus. You know, I'm always struck that after she touches him, he knows immediately because he felt power go out of him. I mean, it's like Jesus is really connected. He knows what's going on. And he turns to find her. You know, he felt her. He was aware of her. He noticed her in that crowd with everyone pressing up against him. And he turns and he's just like, Where is she? Where's that woman? Go find that woman. And he's not angry. He's not offended. He wasn't too busy. He wasn't too tired. He felt the power of her touch, and he wanted to make it personal. He wanted to connect with this woman, and he stops everything to do it. This huge crowd is there with Jesus. And who knows? I'm sure he was on the way to go somewhere because he always walked with a purpose. He stops everything to find this woman. And I think, you know, what it communicates to me is that there's no untouchable people. There's no hopeless case. He's not ashamed, afraid, or embarrassed by us. He says, I notice you. I feel your pain, your loneliness, your insecurity, your emptiness. And we're allowed to come as we are. He's not offended that it was like, you touch me when you're bleeding, what? You need to take care of that and then come to me. No, as we are. That it's not about being perfect. Isn't that refreshing? Yes. That I don't have to have it all together. Because I don't know about you, but I can feel that way. Like I have to have it all together before I'm presentable. And with Jesus, he's just like, you're presentable as is. I made you. You're my daughter. I think it's amazing about him and so refreshing to me. You know, we can come as we are and reach out. And by law, her touch should have made him unclean, but that's not what happened. Instead of making Jesus unclean, he made her whole. And that's the power of touch that changes lives. She was determined to touch Jesus, but Jesus was determined to touch her soul. And let's think about that. You know, Jesus turns around and tries to find her. You know, he could have done something a little bit more subtle than like, where is she? Find her. You know, to everybody around. He's like, you know, bringing attention to this. He could have just, you know, he's a son of God, right? He knew who touched him. This wasn't a mystery to him. He knew. He could have just turned to her and given her that knowing look of like, I know that you are healed and I know your faith and this is wonderful. He could have done that. And that could have been an incredible moment for her. He could have done a nod of acknowledgement. He could have walked by her and just grabbed her hand to let her know that he's there and that he knows. But he doesn't do that. He's like stopping everything and basically calling her out. Now, at first, this can seem quite cruel, if you think about it. Like, this woman obviously wants to do this in secret. She's been very clear. She got to him, touched the tassel, healed, sneaking away. No one knows. And sometimes that's how I like to function, right? You know, it's like, I know I might have some needs, but we're not going to talk about that. And I'll just kind of do this and get it done and sneak away. And I want to sneak up to Jesus and then just kind of go away like nothing ever happened. And, you know, what Jesus does, it's like so contrary. He does not let her go unnoticed. He doesn't let her go. He doesn't let her go unnoticed. And, you know, I think back to standing in Times Square on this crowded New Year's Eve evening and being singled out there. And you know, if someone's singled out, what happens? Like all of a sudden everyone takes a step away. So there's that space around you now so that it's like very clear that you are the one that everyone is going to look at and talk about and think things about. And I think about that happening and everyone staring at me. And then up on those big screens all over Times Square, my shame story, that bleeding place that I've tried so hard to get rid of, and now I just hide it, plays for everyone to see. I mean, talk about your worst nightmare. I mean, I would just want to die. I'm like, no wonder why this woman, like, just drops down at his feet, terrified, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. But see, shame loves secrecy, right? I mean, and we work very hard and become experts at hiding, right? But that's where shame loves to live, in those places where we hide. And, you know, we really can be good at hiding. And sometimes it's, you know, we kind of go into caretaker mode, right? We can be so busy helping and serving everybody else that no one will see what's going on back here. You know, sometimes we hide it in front, you know, behind perfectionism. It's that I have to have it all together. And, you know, we do everything to make our lives look perfect so that no one would suspect that there's another story behind there. You know, sometimes we spend a lot of time buying stuff and redecorating our home, right? Instead of doing some internal renovation, we do the renovation over here. And it's kind of like a magician, you know? The art of being a magician is the art of redirection. It's like, don't look at what's happening here. Look at this. You know, sometimes we hide behind control, right? We try to control everything. People, friends, children, husbands, we can't control all of it. And we get very upset if people don't follow our plan. Because the risk is our shame story surfaces and those feelings surface. And I think one of my favorite ways to hide the shame, I don't know if you know this one, I'm fine. Yeah, everything's great. Yeah, yeah. It's been so... So how are you? Right? The smile. and the kind of deflection. Let's focus on you, because I'm great. We kind of take that deep breath and you kind of tuck it all away and you just, you know, like nothing happened. You may have been sobbing before you left, but you show up and it's all good, right? No one knows. And I don't know, maybe you did that before you came here today, right? But what Jesus does with this woman is completely counterintuitive. It doesn't make sense. He does the complete opposite of what we usually do, of what I want to do, because he knows that shame loves secrecy, that that's where it's going to grow and fester, and that's just where it's going to take over. That's where it has its power. And he puts the pressure on. Find this woman. And I love how his disciples respond. They're like, are you kidding me? Do you see all the people around you? Do you see that everybody's touching you? And you're talking about one person? And, you know, I imagine this woman trying to kind of sneak away in the crowd. And I don't know where she was in the crowd when all of this was going down. But it's like, maybe I can get away fast enough. And then that realization that she's going to be found out. So she just comes to Jesus and just lays herself down, trembling with fear. And she tells her story. And there's such power in that truth. You know, it says she laid down and she told the truth, the whole truth. Because there's power in touch to change our life, but there's power in truth to free our life. Because it frees us from shame. And I love how Jesus isn't the one to share her story, right? He knows it. He knows all of us. He knows our whole story, that he could just sit and speak about it. But he doesn't, because he knows the power is in her sharing her story. It's not his to share. He really isn't about calling her out and blasting it up on the screens. But he wants her to have the experience of sharing her truth so that she can be free. You know, it's about owning and embracing our story and sharing it, all the parts of it, and that you're the one who shares it. And it's also not the, well, you already know what I'm going to say, or, well, you know what I mean. Do you know how we do that? We kind of like expect people to kind of read our minds and fill in the blanks. So we don't actually put our story out there. And there's a difference, because we lose the power. And we think that, well, just because people kind of know us, that I should have the power of truth. But it's about us really sharing our truth. And it's not just about blurting it out, right? But it's about having the right person there when you do. And that person is Jesus. And it didn't matter that the crowds were there to hear it also. Because it's freeing in that not only am I sharing this with Jesus, but everybody else can know, and I'm okay. I mean, that's powerful to have that. And it's not until we're exposed, not until we share our truth, that we're able to connect with the love and acceptance of Jesus. And that's the peace that heals our soul. And I want you to ask yourself, what story do I need to share? What story does shame have hold on you over? What story do you need to be free from? What story did you invite in here earlier? You know, and going back to how Jesus responded, you know, I love really sitting on the scriptures and kind of taking a little bit more time with it, because sometimes it's easy to just kind of glance over it. And there's a lot of power in some of the small words. And in verse 34, you know, the first way he responds to her is he calls her daughter. Now think about that. This woman who's been completely ostracized and cut off from her family and her community. And Jesus calls her daughter. I mean, it's a term of endearment, respect, affection. But it also says, you're part of my family. You're part of this community. You are accepted. You're noticed. You belong. You're mine. He restores her body, mind, and soul. Right? That's the power of Jesus. You know, he talks about her faith. He gives her credit for her part of having that little bit of faith to push through that crowd. He's not about taking it all himself, right? Well, it was my cloak. No. Your part was powerful. That even in your state, with your bleeding, with the shame, with whatever it's been that's been tormenting you, you're powerful. That piece of faith you have, that you may even doubt is there, is still powerful. And then he says to her, go in peace and be freed from suffering. You know, this woman suffered in her body, mind, and soul. And Jesus brings peace. He brings freedom to our bodies. He brings it to our minds. He brings it to our soul so that we can be alive and live life to the full. Jesus goes beyond taking our symptoms away. And he heals and frees each part of us. Those places we hide away, those places we have spent all we have on and been to many doctors, those places where we feel shame and emptiness and loneliness, that he heals and frees us from those stories that have a hold on us. That story that's in the back of the room or sitting up front, that truth that can haunt us. And if we really want to be alive, we need to experience Jesus, the power of touch, by reaching out to touch him, and experience the power of truth by sharing our story in his presence. You know, I'm going to encourage you to ask whoever brought you out today to sit down with you and show you more of Jesus, so that this isn't an afternoon where you just bumped into him. But that this can be a time where you decide to reach out and touch him. A time when you owned your story and shared it. So that you can experience the power of touch, which changes your life. And the power of truth that frees your life. And then be truly alive in your body, mind, and soul. Amen.